up next on Tapestry. We're rolling into Medina, New York, a small town built on big dreams and even bigger stone. First stop, the Medina Sandstone Hall of Fame, where local legends and landmark buildings share the spotlight.
Buffalo has 36 major buildings. Medina has 43.
We visit Bent's Opera House, a beautifully restored 19th century theater that's helping bring new life to Medina's Main Street.
There was a lot of national need to save this building because it's one of the oldest opera houses in the country.
And we're not leaving town without a ride through history at the Medina Railroad Museum. And yes, the trains are epic.
We house in our model train layout the largest collection of model trains on the Eastern Seaboard.
It's all ahead on Tapestry right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Today we're spending the day in Medina, a small village with a big story nestled in Orleans County. The trip feels a little personal because a few years ago, I was working on a documentary about Buffalo's Richardson Olmsted campus. And that's where I first learned about the beautiful stone that gives those buildings their soul, Medina Sandstone. Today, I'm back to learn more. I'm meeting Mary Zengerle, one of the founding members of the Medina Sandstone Society.
Right. This is the first class of the Medina Hall of Fame.
Look at that. The Richardson Olmsted campus.
And there's the workers.
Look at that. Wow.
Irish, English, Polish, and Italian. And those are the ethnicities that built the community as well.
Mary and I sat down to chat about the full story of this remarkable stone and the legacy it's left behind.
There are some very famous structures all over the world that are built with Medina sandstone. And literally, the foundation of this community.
That's correct.
Is the stone.
That's right.
And figuratively, too. We're going to get into all of that. But what are some of those famous buildings that I might recognize right off the bat?
The Brooklyn Bridge.
Brooklyn Bridge.
Indeed, indeed. They say that part of Buckingham Palace has sandstone, Medina sandstone is questionable, but sandstone nonetheless. Mm-hmm. Our state capitol and its million-dollar staircase is built from Medina sandstone, and the beautiful carvings are just a sight to behold.
Why do they call it the million-dollar staircase? Because of the material?
I think back in the day, that's what it cost to build. Nowadays, it would be way more than that. But
wow. Talk to me about how Medina sandstone was discovered from the very beginning.
Well, from the very beginning, John Ryan founded a quarry, and he had dug down. The quarry was existing before the canal came here. Sandstone is only 10 feet below the surface of our land here because it's so low.
And so as they're building the Erie Canal,
right,
they don't have to go very far.
That's right.
And you hit the sandstone.
We had used to have six quarries right here in Medina. And it was named Medina Sandstone simply because that's where it was discovered.
Where it was discovered,
it
yes.
Could very well have been named Orleans Sandstone or Albion Sandstone, but we lucked out, and it's Medina Sandstone.
This incredible material created an entire industry in this part of Western New York.
That's right. We have a St. John's Episcopal Church was the first building here built of sandstone, and in 1832. The building that we're in is built of sandstone. It's called City Hall. That was when Medina had great visions for itself. It was going to be a city. We have the armory. We have a number of churches. Anywhere you look on Main Street, there will be a sandstone building. And a lot of our homes have sandstone foundations.
In the city of Buffalo, we know that there are a lot of you know, really prominent buildings that are made of Medina sandstone. How many buildings does Buffalo have? Do you know?
Buffalo has 36 major buildings. Medina has 43.
Medina has more than Buffalo?
Yes.
Oh, see, but I like that.
But the buildings in Buffalo certainly are grander and much larger.
Sure.
And more showy. And now, of course, the more famous is the Richardson Complex we spoke about earlier. The Connecticut Street Armory is another St. Louis church. And several of those buildings have been inducted in our Hall of Fame. We have a marvelous website, and on the website is a database listing all the sandstone buildings that we've identified. It lists the structure, the address, the architect in most cases, mm-hmm. the date it was built, and even down to the quarry that those stones may have come from. We had at one point almost 50 quarries across the county and employing between 1,200 and 2,000 individuals at the time, and a payroll of, what was it, $50,000. I mean, that doesn't sound like very much now, and because especially the quarrymen only earned 20 cents a day working
really?
in the quarries. It was a huge impact, and it's second only to our agriculture in our area as far as economic impact, but very dangerous. A lot of the stone cutters caught what they called stone cutters consumption from inhaling the stone dust. So it wasn't an easy job by any stretch, but it employed people from teenagers, younger than teenagers, right up through. In some cases, there were three generations working in the same quarry.
Talk to me a little bit about why it is such a durable material.
Number one, it's fireproof. It doesn't burn. We have a structure in town that burned last couple years ago, and the structure is still solid. And it's not slippery for sidewalks. It has a grit to it. Actually, 85% of the material that was quarried was used for pavement and for curbs. Only 15% was used in architecture. But that 15% is much more visible and much more grand.
So not at all what one might expect.
No, exactly. You would think just the opposite.
Just the opposite, yeah. Mm-hmm. Why did it fall out of popularity? It's got so much going for it.
Well, it's difficult to quarry, as we've
okay.
discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And it fell out of favor in the early 1900s, 1920. And you remember from history, that was a pandemic. 1918, Spanish flu pandemic, and then World War I. So the workforce, the manpower, wasn't there. And in addition to that, Portland cement became much more popular, and concrete block that could be formed into building materials.
The other thing that really comes to mind is the cost.
Well, exactly. Asphalt is another product that came to be for roads, and it divots after use.
You know, don't we know that in Western New York?
There you
are. It sure does.
And sandstone does not do that.
Let's talk a little bit about the Medina Sandstone Society. How did that come to be?
It started originally as a way to save our armory. The Armory Action Committee was formed to help keep that building viable.
Okay.
And from that, we determined or decided that there were lots of sandstone buildings in Medina and in the area that needed to be recognized. In the early 90s, I believe, we switched over to become the Sandstone Society and decided that we would be try to highlight and document our buildings and also create a foundation to give back to the community.
The Medina Sandstone Society isn't just preserving the past, they're celebrating it and paying it forward by inducting new buildings each year in their Hall of Fame. Before we wrapped up, Mary finished our tour and shared one of the hall's most colorful legends.
The Presbyterian Church of Albion, mm-hmm. that spire is 175 feet high. And the story goes, the mason who finished it was on the finial. He was way up on top. And when he finished, he stood on his head on the top of the spire, 175 feet up, and yelled, "Hurrah for Grant!" U.S. Grant was president at the time.
Oh, wow.
So that's our folk story.
While that seems daring, why not stand on your head?
Exactly.
There's more tapestry coming up for Medina, including a look inside Bent's Opera House, right after this snapshot of Medina history.
The Heinz Pickle Factory opened its doors in 1899, quickly becoming a vital part of Medina's economy. But during World War II, it also became the site of something few would expect, a prisoner of war camp. From 1943 to 1946, the Heinz factory grounds housed more than 300 POWs, starting with 71 Italian soldiers and later 116 German soldiers. Their barracks stood where the West Side parking lot is today. These prisoners became part of the local labor force, working in the Heinz plant, on nearby farms, and in other local factories, helping fill major labor shortages caused by the war. They were paid a modest wage, 80 cents a day in canteen coupons, and what they didn't spend was credited to them when they were eventually repatriated. At one point, German prisoners held a strike because they were not allowed to smoke in the Heinz factory or loading platforms. As a consequence, their privileges were revoked and personal items removed, but the next day, every prisoner voluntarily returned to work. Today, there's little physical trace of this era, but the story endures as a reminder of how global history touches even the smallest corners of Western New York.
Welcome back to Tapestry. Vibrant main streets are the heart of small towns, serving as bustling hubs of commerce, community, and local culture that bring people together. The crown jewel of Main Street in Medina is Bent's Opera House. It's just stunning. Jacqueline Ikus is the events manager at the Opera House, which actually functions as three distinct spaces. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us today on Tapestry. You know, when you drive down Main Street, there's no mistaking what building is Bent's Opera House.
It's like a flagship. Everyone knows where to go when you point out, oh, start at Bent's Opera House and go in any of these directions.
Let's go back in history when this building was first built and conceived of. What was its function then?
Yeah, so it was built in 1865.
Okay.
Actually by a farmer named Don Carlos Bent, which is where the name comes from. And it was entirely built out of original Medina sandstone.
It's on the National Registry, right, of historic places.
It was not only on the registry, but it was noted in one of the seven places to save, which was designated around opera houses. So there was a lot of national need to save this building because it's one of the oldest opera houses in the country. But in the 1800s, it also welcomed political rallies from speeches, commencements, performances. But one of the most interesting features is that it never hosted an opera.
My next question was how many operas were performed here?
We did have P.T. Barnum and we had Buffalo Bill Cody. Both did performances here. Motion pictures came out full force in 1920s. And after that, it wasn't really being used at all. Second floor was, for a brief moment, it was an apartment building. So there was people living in the building, but not necessarily using the third floor. There was no access up here. The stairs were completely shut off. And the first floor really served as the commercial space. So there was a drugstore that ran for about 40 to 50 years down there, sat empty for a little bit. Then Bank of America came in until they finally decided to close the doors. And, you know, they made the decision about 2009. 2010, they officially vacated and realized that it needed to be saved, so they donated the entire building. We still actually have the original vault doors. And it's like a photo op moment. People always ask about it. And again, it's bringing that tie into history. You know, they really wanted to make sure that it was and stayed in the community for what it should be.
So who stepped up to then begin that process of saving it? I mean, it's gorgeous now.
Yeah, actually, Orleans Renaissance Group, again, realized that it needed the right person for it. And they really sought out Roger and Heather Hungerford, who owns Talus Equity, who has been doing some of the most major restorations in Medina. and they knew that he was the right person.
Tell me more about Roger. What else was he working on?
Roger has done quite a few things in Medina, such mm-hmm. as restoring the original Medina High School, restoring Sandhurst, a church, bringing a lot of the history back in, and just saving these buildings that needed to be saved.
So he got to work.
He did.
Yes.
He started, took over in 2016, and it was a pain laboring 4 years to restore it. Keeping the sand sewed on the building, restoring the original floors, keeping all the architectural elements. I mean, you look at the pictures from the 1800s, and it looks exactly the same, just maybe some fresh paint color.
But today, how does Bent's Opera House function?
So in 2025, it is a beautiful multi-event space. So our main floor, if you haven't been in, we feature a beautiful restaurant called Harvest. Everything, as much as humanly possible, is locally sourced.
What's the second floor?
Second floor is beautiful and unique. It is 10 completely different boutique hotel rooms.
What are the elements that we can see in the building? Like right now we're in the Opera House, but even on the other floors that are original and sort of are a nod to the past.
Absolutely. So just on the Opera House in general, the mezzanine is your biggest one. The side stages and all of the details that's in front of the stage, those are all original and just restored.
So are these like... these are like special boxes?
Yeah, those would be your box
seats. People would sit in for operas?
Yep.
Okay.
So those would be your, you know, your elite VIP would sit there and experience the opera up close.
I love how it also, it has original architectural features, but with modern elements.
And the modern elements are, they're almost hidden. It is a super technologically advanced space.
How has this restoration, from your perspective, impacted the local community?
Being a super tie to history, having one of the oldest opera houses in the country, but not only just having it as a building, but having it as a usable space. It's given them something to be proud of. Those are just all great things that are not only tying the community in, but bringing outside people to Medina. And then it is pushing up and bringing up the rest of Medina, because now you want to go lunch, you want to go, you know, to get a massage, you want to get coffee. We have a great bridal shop right across the street. All these little businesses are seeing the influx of people traveling here for somewhere to stay, somewhere to perform, and somewhere to eat.
It's a gift back to the community.
It is. We want to bring as many people here because we know in turn that they're going to go spend money in the community.
Mm-hmm. And people need to have pride in their community, right? And I think especially in smaller towns, right? That's really important to the folks who live here.
You know, I grew up on another canal town, and my experience with Medina really was limited until I came here for work. And the very first time that I drove through, I was in awe of just the town and how everything looked. And I was like, oh, this is what all the towns are trying to do. This is the flagship of the canal towns, of the port towns. This is what small towns really need to be. I mean, it literally looks like it's out of a Hallmark movie.
Thank you so much for taking a few minutes out of your busy day, because this is a bustling place, to talk to us a little bit about Bent's Opera House.
Oh, you know what? I love it. It's really a passion, just getting it to where it needs to be and getting the word out for everyone to know that it's here.
Tapestry continues in just a moment. All aboard, because we are headed to the Medina Railroad Museum right after this.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there. With trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music, it's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader, and we're going to wrap things up by visiting the Medina Railroad Museum, housed in an old freight train station. We're here today with Jeffrey Lewis, Executive Director. Thank you so much for taking some time with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about the original purpose of this station and the railroad that runs through Medina?
Sure. Medina Railroad Museum was originally built and started in 1905. It was built by Hudson River Railroad and New York Central Railroad. Mm-hmm. It's the largest freight house that was built on the East Coast. And right across West Avenue from us is the passenger station.
Okay.
And we had passenger trains coming in here till the early 50s, and then there just wasn't the ridership to support that.
What happened in the 50s after sort of just the whole rail system and its workflow kind of slowed down because of other means of transportation?
It did. I don't want to say the building was neglected, but the building changed hands a lot.
The station itself is narrow and incredibly long. What are the dimensions of the building?
The building's about 39 feet
wide. Okay.
And I'm using my hands, and I need to remember nobody can see this.
That's okay.
but it's about 305 feet long. So it's huge.
Right.
We house in our model train layout, mm-hmm. the largest collection of model trains on the Eastern Seaboard. So we're pretty lucky.
We are definitely going on a tour, yeah. Right? Okay, good. Just around the corner, trains come into life in miniature. That's where we meet Erica Wineski, a docent who shows us around the museum's massive model train set. And the little world, it keeps chugging along.
All right, let's head inside.
All right. Whoa. It starts out,
wow,
in the more vintage time, shall we say, 1800s.
The detail is absolutely incredible. There is such a fascination with trains among kids and,
great.
You know, you don't want that ever to go away. And yet, you know, you think of kids now, and it's good that we have things like this that can help them understand the past through the fascination of trains.
Because everything we have today depends on the history that we had yesterday.
Yes.
And my passion is people, the community. They come in and they're looking for something to do, and they have such a joy when they come in and either remember things that happened in their childhood, or they're stimulated by the novelty of it all. So everybody comes in for a different
right.
reason. And this is what excites me about museums, is people are having fun.
So for the record, I will be pushing every button. I need to know what they all do.
At the end of the tour, I couldn't help but notice a section dedicated to remembering the visionary behind the museum, Marty Phelps.
Marty Phelps arrived on the scene. Marty Phelps was a firefighter and was fascinated by trains. Just, they were his passion, his life force.
So Marty bought the building?
Marty bought the building.
Oh.
And then Marty's vision, which we're still trying to carry on, was to have the building be a museum. He integrated his collection. He integrated the donations that people made to the museum. Mm-hmm. So everything that's here has provenance, and it is here for a reason. Either it's relationship to trains and the train development in this area.
Can you tell me a little bit about Marty? What was he like?
He was a really congenial fellow. And he had a way of making people his friends, and it worked really well for him, and it made him so successful, both as a firefighter, as a museum curator, that vision was fabulous. One of the things that we do is we try to take and build from within the community, and build the community into our process. And our community is much broader than just Medina. It's all of Orleans County. And then in truth, it's all of Western New York.
Sure.
We are bringing people in now from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Canada, Toronto area. So
you have, obviously, the model trains that are massive. I've never seen an exhibitor display that rivals it, seriously. But you also have full-size locomotives that are outside of the building. So how many engines do you have here? Or how many train cars?
We have just the two engines.
Okay.
They're called E8s, and they were paired. You have one on the end and one on the front end and one on the back end because it allows you to push the engine, push the train the other way.
Push or pull.
Exactly. Oh. And that's exactly the purpose.
Talk to me about some of the excursions that happen through the Medina Railroad Museum every year.
We work with a Mattel-funded excursion, and that's Day Out with Thomas. And we bring Day Out with Thomas every year. We'll be here four times in September with Thomas.
What is it like during Day Out with Thomas around here?
Oh, it's crazy and fun at the same time. So many kids, so many young kids, so much excitement.
The kids and the families, they can go on a little train ride and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And get to touch Thomas and get pictures with Thomas, you know.
Yeah.
All those kind of things that make it a very special experience.
So what are some of the other excursions that you do throughout the year?
Oh, well, we do a fall foliage train. We do murder mystery train.
Of course. Wow. I bet those are wildly popular.
Yeah, that's really fun. And, and we do Polar Express, which is we do with Warner Brothers. It's beautiful. The museum is lit up.
Mm.
What's so exciting about it, and I mentioned, is this year we had so many folks. And you get to see a crowd boarding the train like you don't see very often in this community.
Only in the movies, right?
Yeah.
Only in the movies. Like you do see, that era, that time in film, right? But you don't ever get to see it live and in action in 2025.
And I get kind of jazzed by the fact I get to try to put it all together so that a lot of other young people, a lot of other people who live in this community get to enjoy what I've enjoyed.
What a gem in this community. Oh. And you're a gem.
Oh, thank you.
Really, you are. And thank you so much for sitting down and taking some time with us today. You know, it is very clear that the Medina Railroad Museum is in wonderful hands with you, Jeffrey.
Well, thank you very much.
That wraps up this episode of Tapestry. We'll definitely be back to explore more of Medina, maybe for the Erie Canal Artisan Festival. Next week, we travel to Jamestown, New York. We'll visit the Roger Torrey Peterson Institute, drop in on the Memory Cafe at the National Comedy Center, and explore how yoga and equine therapy are helping young people manage stress and build resilience. I hope you'll join me. Tapestry is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can listen to all our episodes at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.